Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Mark Andrew, 28 years of career experience, second generation firefighter, a captain on Squad 1 with Dearborn Fire Department in Michigan. Mark knew he wanted to be a part of the same profession his dad was in. It took him nearly 7 years to get on, but Dearborn was the first to call. Once in, Mark gravitated towards the senior men who had the knowledge and skills he wanted to possess. One of Mark's biggest takeaway are the things you learn from good and bad leaders. I thoroughly enjoyed the topics and discussions Mark and I shared and hope the listeners find value in it too. With that, I present Mark Andrew.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mark Andrew. I am a fire captain with the Dearborn Fire Department in Dearborn, Michigan. We're on Detroit's west border, and I have been there for 28 years. I'm currently the captain at Station 1 on my shift, and I ride on an apparatus that we call Squad 1. And for us, a squad company is an engine. It goes on a regular engine, fires and medicals, except we also do carry some tech rescue tools, some water rescue tools, some high angle tools, and a couple of hazmat tools that allow us to be a little bit more versatile. So we do go on more runs than the average engine.
Okay. All right. And please, I'd love to know too, let the listeners and myself know how you got into the fire service.
I am second generation. My dad was a firefighter and with the same department. Didn't plan on being with the same department. I had been applying for years and years, upwards of seven of them back in the 90s when every department was hiring, people were expanding. But it was just hard to get in back then because the standards were just basically a high school diploma and basic EMT. Once I got my paramedic and everybody started going paramedic, then it tightened up a bit. I was able to get hired at Dearborn, and it has been an incredible run.
When you had the notion of going into the fire department, was it something you talked to your dad about first, or was it something you just kind of surprised him with, and how was he accepted to that?
Did speak with him, very accepting of it. He had a good life in it. He's made lifelong friends, gave back to the community, and made a good living. In Michigan, we do well with our labor contracts, or we for the most part have had especially in Dearborn, had a great relationship with our city. You know, some battles here and there, but for the most part, we're in a town where we all want the city to be strong. We want the residents taken care of, and we all can come together at the bargaining table for that.
Okay. And for those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us a little bit about Dearborn? How many stations, personnel, things like that?
Absolutely. Dearborn is one of the bigger departments in the state. We are the fourth largest city in the state, maybe third with that last census, and easily one of the bigger departments. We're budgeted for 151 firefighters. I think we're currently at about 148. We have four stations within the city, but we also merged with a smaller city that borders our south end called Melvindale. And they were just going through some financial struggles a decade ago and reached out. Would we like to merge with them and take over their fire services? And so we did that. They're a 2-square-mile city, maybe 3-square-mile city, and they had a population of 10 or so thousand. And so we've taken on their run. So we now have five stations, but we do cover the two towns.
Oh, okay. All right. And I'm assuming you got five. What's your apparatus complement? How many engines?
We generally
ladders?
Engine rescue, transporting ALS ambulance and ALS echo engines at every station. Two of the stations will have that and the ladder truck. My station has that, plus the shift supervising battalion chief. And then one of the other stations will have that, plus one extra engine. So they have two engines, a ladder and a rescue, just because they have a much, much larger district.
Okay. All right. And what's your minimum staffing?
Contractually, 28. But we staff at 45 a day, but there's five off on vacation and there's never going to be an open vacation spot. So we start at 40 a day and then you just whittle down from work injuries and people that are off sick or people that are dealing with an illness. This one guy's having surgery or whatnot. And then that usually gets us to, I would say we spend a lot of the time at 36 or 37 a day.
Okay. And as far as on your engines and your ladders, is it 4, 3?
We do 3. We're really lucky with that. We've been doing 3 on the engine almost since our founding back in the 1920s. And we are one of the rare suburbs in Michigan that does that.
Okay.
There's just a few other bigger towns and decent suburbs like us that could do the 3-man ride. There are a lot of suburbs around us that are 2 on the ambulance, 2 on the engine. So we're very fortunate.
Okay. All right. And on your ladder truck, is it also 3?
Yes, that one is also 3 as well. We had gone 2 for the longest time, but won the third man in the contract dispute.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. Good. And I'm sorry, I always like to ask too. And roughly, approximately, how many calls a year do you guys go to?
Last year we did, I want to say, like just a hair under 18,000, like 17,900, 999.
Okay.
So I think on a weekday, my station, medicals, alarms, everything included, we'll do 20, 25 stamps in that logbook.
Okay. And 24 hours, 48 hours?
Yeah, we are 24 on a 56-hour work week. So we alternate for 3 and then a 4-day off.
Oh, how many shifts do you have?
We have 3 units.
3 units. Okay. Okay. All right. Awesome. So I'm going to kind of go back a little bit in time. So when you had the notion that you wanted to become a firefighter and you wanted to work for where your dad worked, what was, upon getting accepted, what was your rookie or your recruit class experience like?
It was very busy. When I had started, we had the plan in place to go from basic transport to ALS or paramedic transport. So while that ambulance hadn't yet launched, they were hiring paramedics. So I was part of the second paramedic group they started hiring. And we only had, we had the 4 stations because that merger wasn't going to happen for about 20 years. And only 3 of the stations had an ambulance. And when they added the ALS ambulance, that was going to be now the 4th. So for the first few months, we only had the 3 ambulances. But once that ALS program launched, I thought probation went easy for me because it was so busy. We only had 1 ALS ambulance, so it was dispatched to every chest pain, every trouble breathing, and every trauma across the city. And of course, I'm sure as you know, everybody says they're having chest pain. And then we get there and it's an anxiety attack or it's abdominal pain. So the call volume was extraordinarily high. I'm routinely doing 18, 20 calls a day. And so it just kept me busy. I looked busy in front of my bosses because I always had something to do. I was rarely bored around the station. I was rarely getting into trouble because I was just always gone. And it was just a learning experience. Plus, I worked in a private ambulance, so I was used to just doing calls all day long. Okay. That was just what you did. So to me, it was no different. It's definitely a challenge for the younger guys now that we're up to a much safer staffing level. We have ALS engines everywhere. We're now giving them that encouragement to stay busy with training and working on tools. And for me, it was just going on calls all day long.
Okay. And so did you seem to gravitate towards any particular individuals, or was it more that you, anytime you had a question, you went to your dad?
I absolutely gravitated more towards the senior firefighters on the crew. Even though we were just making that transition to ALS, the way a fire department was running, the types of calls we were going on, the amount of calls we were going on, the customer service we were bringing to the job was already changing to that from my dad's generation. Okay. So I absolutely trusted the senior firefighters I was with. In terms of gravitating towards people, It was such a long road to get hired. Everybody took 5 years to get hired. It took me 7 years. And so while I worked for the department my dad worked at, I would work for any department that would pick me. I just wanted a job. Just by coincidence, this was the department who called first. But I got to know all these other applicants. Half of us were in paramedic class together. Half of us worked at the private ambulances. There was a city that hired a part-time auxiliary. We worked there for a little bit. And so many of us applicants got to just know each other. So there was just a built-in bond through that common experience.
It is kind of wild, speaking with so many other individuals when you hear, like, back in the day how competitive the fire service was, and then you look at
Sure.
it now and you're
Oh my
like,
gosh.
damn.
Is it like that in South Carolina where you're struggling to get applicants?
I'm in North Carolina.
North Carolina, gotcha.
But yes, and but the thing is, it's everywhere. Even big
Okay.
cities see that their numbers are not what they used to be.
Yeah, well, we easily our last 4 years, we'll put out for applications, we'll have three spots, and we'll get two or three applicants and hire all two or three of them.
Wow.
And there's times where we'll have four spots and we'll get four applicants, but one doesn't have paramedic license in hand yet. And so we'll just hire three because they're the only three we got. And that has definitely changed. We're hiring sometimes people straight out of school, even though we would prefer you can just go work at some private somewhere, work at another county EMS, work in the ER or something, and just learn how to just deal with medical emergencies. It would be great if people had that experience, but it's forced us on the company officer level and that senior firefighter level to step up that training and that coaching and that mentoring. Because we do have a couple of really smart young go-getter kids that were straight out of school.
Okay. And if you can tell me, what is your rank structure like at Dearborn?
Firefighter entry level, so just firefighter one, then senior firefighter, we just call it firefighter two. They are now trained to drive the fire truck if the driver is off on vacation. And then they can ride in charge of an engine if the lieutenant is off. And then there is engineer. You drive the fire truck every day. That's a sought after spot when you're going to more fires. And that is the rank at which you're not assigned to the ambulance anymore. Our ambulances do go to fires and they have firefighting tools. It's just you go to less of them because you're on so many dang medicals all day long. You're just not there.
Right.
And so then it's engineer and then it's lieutenant. So lieutenants, if you're at a station with a ladder truck, the lieutenant's on the engine and then captain is on the ladder. I'm at a station with just an engine, so I am on the engine every day. And then shift battalion chief after that. And there's three of them because you have one for the shift.
Okay. If a lieutenant is at a house that just has an engine, where do they go?
Oh, I'm sorry. The lieutenant is in charge of the engine. And then, oh, I'm sorry. I see what you mean. Yes, if they only have an engine, there is no lieutenant. It's captain and then senior guys. So at my
Gotcha.
station, I don't have another officer to assist me. I rely on the senior guys to be that liaison between me and some of the younger guys. So I'll delegate to them a lot of things I need done.
And if you have a day off, though, who moves up? Can a firefighter two move up to ride your spot?
That is where we lock it off. The firefighter two cannot step up to be in charge of a station. It's got to be a lieutenant. They can only do the lieutenant spot. And so if a
Gotcha.
lieutenant's off and there's no firefighter twos at that station for the day, we'll send them one of ours. I am off, a lieutenant from another station will have to take the detail in.
All right. At what point in your career did you decide to start moving up the ranks, and why?
You always want to take that firefighter two and that engineer promotion. It's more of a rotation on the engine. It broadens your role. You're learning new skills. Plus, there's a pay bump involved. But me and some of my colleagues, when we were easily in our first year, recognized that lieutenant's the gig. That looked like fun. You're the junior officer at a station, so you're still somewhat connected to the crew. you still have a vibe of being one of the guys, but you're a boss and you're on an engine every single day. So early on, my career goal was lieutenant.
Okay. And how long did you wait before you decided to move up to that rank?
You don't really have a choice. We don't let you start testing, I think, until about 3 to 5 years. And then the first two promotions are, if you can qualify past the exam, then you're placed in a in-rank seniority order. So probably you get to about year 15, and then that's when the lieutenant spots start opening up, hopefully.
Okay. If I can ask you a personal question,
Ask away.
what are your thoughts on organizations that have like a set number of years of service before you can move up?
That's a toughie because it's so complicated. I hate restricting people back if they're incredibly smart, but the other side to that is you don't want to just have solely book smart people that can ace exams promoting. There's a police department in our area. I was talking to a guy, and they do that. It's just straight written score. So they
Mm.
have an inordinate amount of police road sergeants with only a couple of years on the job managing 18, 20-year corporals only because they are photographic memory type people and could just memorize textbooks. But it doesn't make them good leaders. So I like the promotional system that's a little balanced.
Okay.
For like ours works for us, the Firefighter 2 promotion, you're generally going to have anywhere in the 5 to 10 year range. When you get that, well, I think the group that's promoting this summer for the last couple of retirements, I think are in the 7 year range. And so they passed an exam. The exams are decently tough. In a lot of years, 80s are good scores. So it makes you have to work. Maybe one or two people can score in the 90s. So they're decently tough. They're not things that people are just going to ace, but it makes you have to work. It makes you have to learn. The tests are based on industry standard textbooks that they rotate every year, and then our SOPs, our fireground SOPs, and our rules and regs. So you got to learn your own department as well.
Okay.
Once we go to the lieutenant position, now they throw in an interview for every subsequent promotion. So then you not only it's I think 60% written test, 40% interview. And the interview is an oral board of a few people, and they could throw in fire scenarios and see how you react. They could throw in disciplinary scenarios, see how you react. But it's also a judgment of your thinking skills. It's not a perfect system. There's a lot of issues with the interview process. Human nature creeps into it from time to time because we all know each other. And so, sometimes just knowing people and not knowing others as intimately, human nature wise, can just affect scores. But it is definitely forcing people to have to learn the job. And I know some big cities have done strict seniority, and I'm certainly not a fan of that. I've seen in some major cities in America at various conferences, talk to some chief officers who their only qualification was is they're still alive. If you're on the job, you're next in seniority, you're promoted. You don't have to prove anything. And so there's a downside to that as well.
No,
So I like the
and
mixed system a little
okay.
bit.
Okay. And you are correct. You are right that there is no perfect system. Everyone always thinks, well, we can always do better, or mine's perfect, or ours is not, or whatever. But I get it. But I do agree with you with the whole seniority thing. Just because you're next up, you're in line. Has this person proved themselves? Have they been into the job? So I 100% agree with you.
Yeah, it's got to be a mixed system because that transition to the front seat is a challenge. And you want people that are becoming your company officers to do it for the right reasons and not just be doing it for the money.
Which brings up, it's perfect you said that, which brings me to my next question. So, from lieutenant to captain, what was your reasoning to get to captain?
That one, I actually wanted the job. But I wouldn't have been upset had I not gotten it. Lieutenant was such a great experience. It didn't have a ton of fires, but had a few, and just enjoyed being that first point of contact for the young members on the team to handle their problems and develop and mold them coming up. And so when I was t testing for captain, I came in with a little bit more of a carefree attitude. I wanted the job. It is a nice pay bump. There are some busy engine companies that are available for me to transfer to if I was to get it. So it wasn't as if I had to go to the ladder truck, which I wasn't very motivated to do. But the nice thing was is I came in kind of calm because it was a very low stress promotion for me. If I got it, that was fine. But if I didn't, lieutenant was such a good gig. So there wasn't a huge motivation to want it to be a captain, but I was willing to do it and wanted to do it if the opportunity arised.
Okay. 100% get that. All right. So my next question for you is, you got captain. So what does leadership look like to you, and what kind of leader did you want to be?
With me, I knew exactly what type of leader I wanted to be because it was something that me and a lot of contemporaries of mine, when we were coming up, talked about. And half the time, 80% of the time, it was we saw examples of poor leadership. And I remember coming back from runs where we would have the guy who was the screamer, or we would have the guy who didn't really grasp advanced medical care, or we had somebody who just thought the drill instructor recruit army dynamic still applied in life, which is odd because that doesn't even apply in the army or the Marines. Once you're out of boot camp, the drop and give me 20 dog face stuff doesn't exist. That's more of a drill instructor boot camp initial response. But we had a lot of officers that just were the yellers and thought they could what's a good way to put it? That they could lead through browbeating and intimidation rather through coaching and mentoring. And so we talked a lot about this coming up. So that was something I felt I prepared myself for the 15 years it took me to become a lieutenant. It was what type of company officer I wanted to be. 'Cause they were open conversations we would have. Hey, if we got a fire, how would you deploy the crews here? Because this one guy was yelling, and then the two people went in the front door looking for a fire, where it was really a basement fire, but he was yelling so much he missed the reading smoke signals and then didn't go in through the side door to the basement. What's a better way we could have done this? Or somebody would get in trouble, and instead of catching it early, the boss just wasn't really available. And so the boss didn't find out about it until the problem got too big. And so little things like that really were formative to me. Would you like to hear an anecdote?
Sure.
Okay. I'm at a, do you have a language filter on here, or is there a warning if
Oh,
there's
no,
poor language,
dude. No,
or
you're
you just...
good. Yeah, you're fine.
So I'm a junior firefighter, and I show up to a fire. And on the rescue, we're a little bit second due just because we allow the fire trucks to head out of the station first. And the captain on the engine, he was at a station with not a ladder truck, was really getting close to retiring, but he was hoping to get over to a ladder. And it just, his transfer hadn't happened yet. He's dealing with some physical limitations. Whether it's back or knee or whatever it might have been, whatever joint injuries are slowing him down a bit. So he really wants that ladder truck. The ladder's a easier lifestyle. But he's trying to get to this minimum retirement age before his body fails him. And he's an incredibly nice person, but he's just got those physical limitations. So we get up to this fire, and he's got his pack on, but he's got no mask on, and his partner's masking up. And there's smoke coming out the chimney. Basement windows are kind of darkened. There's a haze on the first floor. And when he opens up the side door, now we get some pressurized smoke coming out. And so the second due engine shows up, and a rather tall, imposing firefighter, his name is Mark, also, and he became a really good officer. He's not one of the book smart types. He was one of the street smart types, and it really made him a good officer years down the road. He walks up to the side door to see if they need help, and the captain, who has no mask on, still has his coat open, is on a knee, and he points into the basement and goes, "Hey, Mark, it's down there." And Mark stands over top of him and says, "You fucking think so, Larry?" And snatches the hose out of his hand and goes down and puts out the fire. And this captain was fine with it. And I'm standing there. I can't believe I'm watching this. One, there's a guy who doesn't want to go into a fire. Two, he's supposed to be leading this crew into the dangerous situation, being their eyes and ears. And he doesn't go. Break it down even further than that. If you were to do that in the NFL, stand directly over a man and look down at him and yell at him, you would get an unsportsmanlike penalty. You can't do that anymore. Two, he didn't address him by his rank on the fire ground. He called him by his first name. And three, he just flat out shouted at a company officer. But this company officer didn't care. It meant too much to him to not have to get hurt on the job. And I remember standing there watching that and just saying, "Oh my gosh, I'm never going to be that guy." And it didn't take me years to process it. I knew right in the moment, I don't want to do that when it's my turn. I want to be there. I want to be present with my members. I'm going to be their eyes and ears in that fire. I want to be looking out for those scene hazards and those safety issues because I got to have their back. And I can't have their back if I'm not in the building with them.
You know, the scary part is that there are organizations out there with company officers like that today.
Yes, there are. Absolutely, there are.
Like company officers that, and I get it. And I always tell people this, like, as you get older, your body does start to deteriorate. Now, to prevent that, you have to stay active. And I get there's so many different physical, there's so many different workouts, types of workouts you could do out there. Not everybody's gonna have one that's their cup of tea, but you cannot let that stop you from still getting after it. Because regardless, company officer or not, especially if you're on a department where your manpower is limited, you are still a firefighter.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you are, and your role is critical to the mission. You need those eyes and ears. We work in teams of two. You want crew integrity. You don't want to be breaking up crews and borrowing a guy from this unit to go to that unit. Oh, and by the way, I did change his name. His name's not Larry. I just don't want to, embarrass people and call people out. Plus,
Gotcha.
this is nearly 28 years ago.
Okay.
But yeah, it makes a difference if that officer's present, and you can apply the station pl apply that same lesson to the fire station. Does your city have a private room for the company officer?
He has most of them, they have their own office, and depending on the station, they usually have their own bunk room.
Yeah, and so half of our stations, you got your own bunk room, and then a shared company office for the two officers. My station is not. I got the shared office, and I've felt that's been a benefit to me because it forces me to have to get out and be with the crew. I provide them their space. I don't go in the TV room with them. That's their space. That's their space to unwind. That's their space to not have the boss looking over them. If we're in the kitchen, we can hang out together. It forces me to have to be out there on the floor too, and looking around and managing by seeing and doing things. But I've also taken an interest in the job too. So when I'm checking the reports, I'm actually reading them before I check them. So I'm able to go to them in the middle of the shift and say, "Hey, tell me about that call you guys had when such and such happened." And I've found that just like that fire, being present at that fire makes a difference. Being present at the station makes a difference because now if there's a smaller problem, I'm catching it when it's small. And I'm so odd because I'm one of our department trainers. I'm so often talking with our EMS division, and they'll mention, "Yeah, this person had this issue and this issue, and it's blown up now. It's gotten up to this level." And I'll think, "Well, man, where was that officer when this thing happened 7 or 8 times? Why is this young man getting disciplined on time number 9 or 10?" Why didn't they just handle it on time one or two? And the sad part is one, it's the department's now in trouble, and two, the young man's in a lot more trouble because it's now a big deal. Whereas this would have just been a friendly warning at one or two. But by the officer not being physically there, being around, being present, it hampers the operation.
Definitely. Okay. What is one of your non-negotiables for your crew when you're on shift?
You got to be nice to the public. It is non-negotiable to be rude to the citizens. And our people are really good. I've been really, really lucky. Every once in a while, we'll hear about a complaint where, and as one of the more common complaints that we've had in our town, rarely do people have a deep understanding of advanced life support procedures. Rarely do they understand safe staffing a fire apparatus, what apparatus has what equipment. They don't understand cardiology or pharmacology, but they do know if we're nice to them, and they're not afraid to pick up the phone and call the fire chief and said, "Hey, your crew took me to the hospital, and they were yelling at my wife when she had some concerns. Look, listen, lady. Yeah, you can't do that."
Okay. All right. You're definitely you work for an organization that, you guys have ALS units, you have ALS engines, so you do provide ALS care. How do you find that balance between ALS and always remembering you guys are still firefighters as well?
That is a challenge because the call volume is so high, and it's not only just the call volume, it is the number of low priority, non-emergent priority three calls we go on. It is a mental strain to go, and we've had people not make it through their probation because they just resigned and went back to their old department and said it's just too mentally difficult to just be running on a homeless population or running on we have a large immigrant population, and a lot of them are still struggling with English, might not have their own vehicle, might not have the wherewithal to get to an emergency room on their own. So we run on a lot of in cold and flu season, just people with colds and flu. We get a lot of minor cuts that I would put a Band-Aid on, but they're not sure what to do when it's scary for them, so they would just like to get an opinion in an ER. Some people are legitimately sick but just don't have a ride, and so we're dealing with a lot of that. And then just the indigent population of homelessness that's crept up in the last 4 years. It's adds to your call volume, and it's a mental strain. So we coach our people to unwind when they're at the station and have fun, and we try to keep a fair rotation of rotating people onto the engine. As best as we can. So my station does it day for day. We just rotate the people on the back of the engine one day for one day, with the firefighter twos getting more days because they're available to step up on other rigs.
Okay.
So that gives them a little bit of break, a little bit more seasoning for when they make officer. And the problem is my station's only got one fire apparatus, so I've got seven member or six members. It's, they're getting on the engine one every six rotations if they're junior. What helps though is my apparatus goes to every fire and rollover in the city, regardless of where it's at, because our city's big enough to where the two stations that are making up the box alarm for a structure fire are going to leave three stations out. And when we go to those fires, at least my engine is always going to every fire, so there's that benefit there. And when you run into a streak, the young guys are getting more opportunities at my station than they get at some others. So that kind of helps. But when you talk about balancing ALS with the fire service, it is amazing to watch morale increase after a fire. So if I get a fire at noon, everybody's in good mood the rest of the shift. And half the time, the very next day as well. It nothing breaks the mood than being able to do the job that you train for.
Just a personal question, and this is not—I just want to preface this is not a shot at Dearborn or anything like that. But if you could change things for other organizations that have the ALS component to avoid the burnout. What are some of the things you would do, and what advice can you give to company officers that have to deal with that ALS, route?
I would always recommend safe fire staffing in a three person engine. So for the smaller cities that do two in the engine and two on the ambulance, and we have a lot of suburbs that surround us that do that, that is a bit of a grind because then your engine is your officer and your engineer. So you're just on the ambulance until you make engineer, and that's a long, long grind to go through. Now, if they're small enough, everybody goes to every fire. So even if you are on the rescue, you're guaranteed to go because they didn't leave anybody back. Their box alarm is their minimum staffing. Whereas with us, our box alarm is only a third of our staffing. And so I would always recommend negotiating with your city to get that third engine spot because now it provides a rotation for people to truly, truly learn engine company work. So they're not just buried doing ALS work only and occasionally going to a fire, but not even on the fire apparatus. I think riding on the physical engine itself, one, is a fun job, but two, it shows you a different component of being an engine company pipeman.
Okay. And I did forget to ask that question. What does your first alarm box assignment consist of in Dearborn?
Oh, we are two engines and one RIT engine, but one of those three has to be the squad. So if it's in my district or my second due, then I'm going anyway. But if it's not in my second due, then I'll just be the RIT engine. So they want that squad and those tools at every structure. So three engines, a ladder truck, one rescue, and one chief officer. If it's a confirmed fire, we always add a second rescue.
And if it's in your first due, is the squad pumping like
Yes,
are
it
you
does.
taking first due responsibilities?
Yes, we do. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, we will pump first due.
And I'm assuming, is it engines do engine work, trucks do truck work, or are you guys a jack of all trades?
We technically our engine companies do engine company work, ladders do ladder work, but we tend to be more jack of all trades. We were jack of all trades up till about 5, 6 years ago. And just who's ever next, you could take this assignment, and the shift commander, battalion chief, incident commanders would just grab who's ever standing next to them. Hey, go on the roof. But in the last 5 years, we've had some chief officers that really want to start streamlining that and specializing those orders and having the trucks do the truck company work. So I was the step up battalion chief, coincidentally, 4 days ago, and we had a structure, and the crews made a grab, and unfortunately, the person did not survive his time at the hospital. But we got him there with a pulse, and it was an excellent grab. But on that one, yes, I assigned the truck to the roof. The two engines that got there just ahead of me worked on standing orders: one to take extinguishment, one to take the search and rescue. I assigned a second, the third due engine to start a primary search of the second of the second floor where we knew the victim was, and start checking for a second victim. So now I've got two search teams up there. So there on that fire, we were able to keep people in engine and truck company responsibilities. But I'm on the squad, and there's just a lot of times I've easily vented 7, 8 roofs in the last like 2 to 3 years. So you just being a squad company, I know we're a bit of a catch-all just because we got some tools, we got some availability, we're going to everything. And sometimes if I show up and he's given the ladder a search thing, then I'm the roof guy. If he's got the ladder on the roof, then I'll be the search guy if I'm second due. So we tend to fall into the jack of all trades thing, but I know our more modern battalion chiefs we've had the last 2 years are doing their best to keep it as engine and truck.
And do you guys, as far as your operations go, do you guys do what I call PDAs, predetermined assignments?
Very, very limited.
Okay.
Now, our neighbors in Detroit have predetermined assignments. Everything's on a pre-assigned standard operating procedure. And so the guys on the ladder truck, I'm the guy that grabs the 24, I'm the guy that grabs the roof ladder, I'm the guy that grabs the chainsaw, and they all know that. Same on the first two. The fire's on the left side of the truck, I'll take the Detroit bundle, and you're gonna grab the accessory tools on the right side. If the fire's on your side, you take the Detroit bundle. And we don't do that. With the exception of first do attacks the fire, second do grabs the hydrant, third do approach the scene, grab an assignment, and truck. Hopefully, the engine gets out of the way. The truck can park in front of the structure. They could at least set their jacks up, have an aerial ready if we need it, and then the pipeman and the captain can go up on the roof. But we, since we're going on medicals all day long, unlike a big city like a Detroit, a Philly, a Chicago, a New York, we don't know where everybody's coming from because half the time we're out on medicals. And so it's hard to do the riding assignments because every fire is just so different in the order that people are showing up. So half the time we're all out of medicals and the ladder truck shows up first. So we're not going to delay fire attack because the ladder truck's at least got 250 gallons on them. So they'll stretch and just get a knock on it. So if in a perfect world we could do riding assignments, it's just too hard where we're at.
I understand. I understand. And you know, that's the thing. Every department operates differently, and then you'll hear people describe what they do, and some people are like, well, that's crazy. Like some people would think Dearborn's wild for having a ladder truck pull up first and pulling hose. But the thing is, if the fire doesn't go out, problem doesn't get mitigated.
Exactly. Yeah, and we're not one of those departments that's gonna because it's not an engine company to stand there and hit it from the yard. Everybody's trained to go in.
And the fact that's crazy too that you said your ladder truck rides too. So when they get there, everybody's going to work. There is no person that can hide in your department essentially, because you have to do the work.
You generally do, yes. We did a couple contracts to go get a third person on the ladder, so that engineer now can stay with their rig, and it's captain and pipeman on the back, and that really made a difference on the fire ground. Man, did that make a difference! Because, man, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, since they were only two man ladders and they didn't have a pipeman, they ended up just being a second supervisor. The officer was just a second supervisor because he didn't have a partner. So it was kind of a cake job. So we would just assign the rescue company's truck company work because they at least had a two-person team. Now that the ladder has got can leave a dedicated engineer at their aerial apparatus, now the captain's got a partner to go to work. So now we see those captains working a lot more since that we won that net contract.
What does the term aggressive mean to you?
For me, it means interior attack, stopping the fire spread as soon as possible, without pushing smoke all the way through the house. It also means an aggressive search culture and searching houses at almost every chance you get. The big argument we see in our area is because we're bordered to Detroit and they run on so many abandoned buildings, yet they have a high amount of squatters that live in these homes. And so they're in an aggressive search culture, even if the house looks totally dilapidated, because they are routinely just picking up people that had nowhere else to go. And they were just hiding back here, not knowing a drug deal was going to happen in the other side of the house and somebody's going to burn the evidence and you're going to have a house fire half an hour later. So for me, I really like searching. I want to assign those rescue companies search as much as I can because it gets those young firefighters wearing their mask, going into smoky environments, even if it's just hazy, or even if they're not in the thick of it, it at least gets those firefighters in there following instruction, working with a partner, knowing their hand tools, learning building construction. So I've always enjoyed the fact that we do aggressively search.
Okay. So there's that is a non-negotiable for Dearborn. You pull up, yes, fire attack will commence, but a search is happening.
I would say most of the time, yes. Now, every once in a while, you're going to get the known kitchen fire where the homeowner's right there, tells us exactly what's happening. We can make some reasonable decisions at that point. But yeah, so many of these fires when we just show up and we have unconfirmed reports. Well, the guy's car's here, but I'm not sure if he's there or the car's gone, but sometimes he loans his car to a buddy and we're not sure. Then that house is getting searched.
Okay. Is there ever an instance where Detroit's coming in to assist you guys or vice versa?
If a call is on the border, depending on how the cell phone towers ping the call, we might run into each other, but almost never. Detroit would never let anybody come in to their city and put a fire out. Ever. It is absolutely part of their culture that they take care of their own fires. And right now they've got some really good staffing. But 10 years ago, they were in the middle of a bankruptcy, or their mayor was getting prosecuted for bribery, and they had, let's say they got 30 stations, they probably had 10 of them browned out, and their fire call volume was up. Every fire company, with the exception of one little corner, is doing a fire a day, some doing five a day. And even then, when it was harder for them to keep up, they never called mutual aid. It is baked into their culture. This is our city. We protect our citizens.
Okay. With
Almost to a
that,
fault. Almost to a fault. I wish they would have called for help. We would have been there in a second to help our brothers out.
right. With that being said, what's Dearborn's culture like? Like, have you seen it progress towards the positive since you've been
Yes.
on to now?
Absolutely. It was absolutely a discussion we had to have 5 years ago. Our culture got hard. The call volume went up. We were at the end of a SAFER grant. And so until we could apply for another one, we had about a 2 year window there where it was just harder to get people. So we have six ambulances a day, and we were below the number for that sixth for a stretch. And then that just running our city and 15,000 medicals, with one ambulance being segmented off in the industrial part of town, their call volume is naturally going to be lower because it's almost all factories and very few houses. So the other ambulances are doing 20 calls a day. It just was a grind, and we didn't have the leadership culture in place to find ways to keep those young people motivated and happy on the job. And so we had a number of resignations. People that said, I can go to this other city and make more money. I can do less calls a day. I can get yelled at less. We had some people that were we not making the probation too hard, but the joking around hazing nature of probation got a little too cumbersome. And so we just ran into just a lot of young people that didn't want to apply here. And for the first time in my career, saw people would work here for 6 months and say, I'm just going to another department. I'd rather be somewhere else. And we had a one labor contract that went well, but then two more where we had to take some concessions. And so we're at like 7, 8 years ago, and we're on our second concession contract in a row to avoid layoffs. And that meant everybody's passing us up in pay and benefits. And so that combined with the call volume, it really affected our culture. And so one of the biggest things was to get a better labor contract. Once we started having more comparable pay to our comparables in the state, we started attracting at least some more applicants. But once we started internally as a committee, having a retention committee of senior firefighters and some officers really sit down and ask the hard questions about why don't people want to work here and what are things we could do to improve that mindset. A common one was back in the day, you couldn't work out when you're on probation because, quote, we want you out there learning. And so it was just this grind of practicing with tools and cleaning around the station and constantly doing dishes and cook prep work. But you weren't learning the job.
That's
So I
right.
remember that was one specific thing we had to really focus on. Let's let these young guys get in the gym. Let them burn that stress off. Let them get physically fit. We could wash the rigs ourselves. It doesn't have to be the probie's job. And so we started kind of looking at ourselves a little bit. And thanks to some really bright, hardworking members 5, 6 years ago that were on that retention committee, we came up with some really good ideas and it absolutely made a difference. And it's really thanks to them.
Now, what I'm going to say might not be popular for the listeners, and I get it. Everybody has their own take on it, but to me, I would rather have a rookie that knows where things are on the truck, what exactly this does, than having them scrub toilets and making sure food's prepared. Like anybody can do that on the crew, but it's like rookies, they have to, it's like that's their precedence. And I get it. There's some places that have culture. This is the way it's been tradition, whatever the case may be. But for me, I would rather, would you, my question would be, would you rather have a rookie who can cook you one hell of a fantastic dish or get that line stretched without fucking it up?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, I'm with you 100%. I actually push it a little bit too far. The crew will give me some good-natured shots because if we get a rookie and it's his turn to cook, I'll just say, I don't know, let's just grill some chicken breasts and throw out a head of romaine lettuce and bottled salad dressing. And then this way he's got more time to practice his craft. And so then they tease me, all right, let's can we meet you halfway and have him actually make a meal? And so that's always a joke between us. But yes, yeah, you got to have them ready to perform when the time comes because we're not Detroit. Detroit doesn't have a training culture. They have a doing the job culture. So when I talk to their young guys, and we've had a few of our people leave young on the job, or we have a cadet trainee program. They'll leave and go and be fortunate enough to get hired in Detroit. Detroit's a big city, so they you don't come in with anything. They have their own academy, so if you can get preference points if you got basic or medic, but it's still 1,000 people, 2,000 people just showing up taking an old school civil service test in a in some high school gymnasium somewhere. And then they'll have an academy class of 20 people. And so the odds of getting on in Detroit are hard. But once you get on, they will make sure in your probationary year, you're going to be on a busy fire company. So you don't really train in the station. You just go to actually 3 fires a day. So you're just learning by doing. We don't have that. And it is so common that we'll have the probationary guy I have in my crew right now, he's had 5 fires and he's been on for 4.5 months. And that is really hopping. The probie I had before him had a couple. The probie I had before them didn't get anything for 1.5 years. So it's so hit or miss in the suburbs.
Do you guys preference having your probies go on the busy companies?
The busier station, yes. So we won't put our probies in the industrial side of town, but they could be at any of the other 4 because it's a decent mix of car accidents, fires, and medicals.
So perfect. It actually goes well with this question I'm going to ask you, what you stated earlier. What kind of realistic training does Dearborn do for for your members? So with you being a company officer, what kind of training do you do every once in a while with your crew?
I've found the more realistic training is at the company level. Our department's organization tends to put on more formal classes. And that is always a challenge because now there are so many state mandates, federal mandates, ISO insurance rating mandates for what training you got to have. If we're going to accept this grant money, then our training's got to do A, B, and C because it's the rules of the grant. And some of the hardest working people we've got are our training officers, and our assistant chief in charge of training is not an enviable task to do what they do, to try to keep training relevant, but to meet all these federal and state guidelines. So I found the more company level training is way more realistic because they're doing so many formal classes just to keep credits rolling. We can occasionally do what I like to do is when I do our medical training, our ACLS, I don't use the EKG strips that are in the textbook or in the PowerPoint. So we'll watch the science videos and do the actual ACLS course. But when it comes down to the case studies, I don't use the ones the American Heart Association provides. Members just give me EKGs throughout the year, and then I'll say, hey, these two people went on this run. What's this rhythm? And then we'll break it down from there to try to make it more real. And we'll do the same with fires. Hey, here's this fire. Let's put on a class where we can talk a little reading smoke. But those are really few and far between. But at the company level, I could set up any scenario I want based on, how many calls are coming in at the moment. One that I'm able to do, we have a parking garage in our city that's got a standpipe. And so we just show up and I'll just say, this is a high-rise building. There's a fire on the fifth floor. Go attack it without saying anything else. And then the senior firefighters will stay with the engineer and they've got to figure out, all right, I got to find a hydrant. I've got to pump two 2.5s into the FDC. And then the two probies will have to grab our high-rise bundles, a high-rise kit. They'll have to ascend to the fifth floor, taking the stairway. They'll have to figure out how to hook to a standpipe. They'll have to figure out how to deploy their lines. They'll have to then effectively stretch the lines and start shooting water across this empty parking deck. And so for me, realistic stuff like that can happen at the company level. It's hard to organize that department wide.
Especially with this, as how busy that you got. I get it. I totally get
Absolutely.
that. I get that. Okay. When it comes to outside training, getting outside of your department, the four walls within your fire station, learning something new, what's your take on outside training?
It's hit or miss because a lot of the outside training can be super duper valuable. We do send people to legit certified courses for driver's training, for being a pump operator. There's a week long company officer class, levels 1 and 2 in the state of Michigan, and those are really good certified courses. Our outside the department training has really, really gone up in the last couple of years, and we got a lot of stuff in the pike this year. Just some grant money has really opened up, so they can put in for a training grant and send people to an extrication conference in northern Michigan. And so we'll send four people to that at $1,000 a person because of grant money that's now become available. So the but I'd gone through this in the 90s. All of a sudden we got tons of grant money. We're doing all kinds of classes, and then we get into the dot-com bubble bursting in 2000 or after the attacks in 01, and the economy tightens up a bit. Then all of a sudden that outside training kind of whittles away. We're in a high time right now, so we're sending people to outside classes all the time, and they can be very valuable. In terms of outside classes, we're one of the blue card departments, and I think we're considering transitioning away from that, not because it wasn't valuable, but just more of because we want to start looking at some different options and looking different ways to tackle incident command. And so I don't mind the outside courses. The problem with blue card is, and the blue card people will even tell you this, it's not meant to be a cookie cutter program where you just do what I say and you use our terminology. It's supposed to be a program where you learn these lessons and then adapt it to your box alarm in your running district. But a lot of departments were just taking blue card as if it was gospel. And even the blue card people say it's not supposed to be that. But what I like about blue card is it's at least for slower departments. An exercise where you could watch on a computer screen fire progress and talk on a physical radio to somebody else in the same room and do those radio commands and practice them back and forth. It's a very practical way of doing that if you don't get a lot of fires.
So, brought that up. We're going to talk about it too. Now, this is
Let's
just,
do it.
I always like to preface, this is just a discussion for those listening, like, oh, because my department does blue card. So we now, I can say, I think my administration or our administration has seen, I don't think we're going to do away with it, but like, we are now like, so we have a committee that's starting to form writing assignments. We're trying to have our administration let the ladder companies do ladder work, engines do engine work. So it's a win. It's slow, steady progress. You know, Rome wasn't built overnight. My problem I had with Blue Card was it was like you're reading a script and it's always entering through alpha, entering through alpha. And so I would ask questions like, well, what would happen if Alpha is not really the best route to get in, but Bravo is? And we would have some company officers that would realize it. But with the way, with anything, when we hammer something, hammer, 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 that's all you see. It's like you become tunnel vision. And so that all you see is entering through Alpha when really Bravo or Charlie is better. We would have some officers realize it, but we would have a good number that don't because it's that. Repetition, hammer, alpha, alpha, alpha. So, what's your take on how like robotic blue card can make an individual?
That's an excellent point. In fact, you know what? I hadn't even thought about it until you brought it up. But now that I'm refreshing my memory because I did the blue card and I've had to do three recerts. Yeah, you're 100% right. They're very alpha centric with how they enter. Yeah, you nailed it right on the head. That is absolutely not the way you want to run a fire in real life. You got to do those 360 walk arounds. And we had the grab earlier this week, but the fire we had last work round, we're getting smoke coming out the front door. We're getting smoke coming out the A side front window. And they had, and, but it ended up being an upper lower flat. And the second mailbox, I think, fell off the house or something. And the person upstairs just wasn't getting any mail. So the crews went inside and looked. They don't see a staircase immediately to their. Into the center of the house, and they said, "Oh, this isn't a colonial house. I bet this is a two flat." And they had actually done a walk around and seen a second entry door in the Charlie side. And he goes, "Oh, that's what that other door was." Because now they know their building construction, and so they retreat from the front door, they deploy their hose to the Charlie side, and then just force the door. And then there's a separate staircase that leads to that upper rental. And so, yeah, absolutely. You've got to be thinking that at every single fire. And that you're right. That's what blue card doesn't do a good job of.
And you know, we had some officers who were taking blue card as tactics when it's really just terminology.
Yes, I'm in agreement with you on that one. It's in, and we had a guy who did his blue card. He went to the trainer all the way in. Whatever state they're doing, I don't know if it's still Arizona, since I think a lot of
Yeah, I have no idea.
the original family is retired off. And they had told him, "No, please don't take us as gospel. Too many departments are trying to take the computer simulation and then just make it cookie cutter. Yeah, you've got to just adapt these lessons and terminology and thought processes to what you do."
Like for me, I have no issue with blue card. I just hope if a department wants to go to it, take the terminology, but the main thing is make blue card work for your area, for your organization. To do the program and take all of it and be like, all right, we'll make our organization conform and work with that. That's where I see the issue is. If you take bits and pieces, because if you want all your officers that key up on the radio to have the same terminology, I get that. Like, cool, let's do it. But with what we're doing now too, I think our administration, definitely our training chief, is seeing like, hey, if we have task specific apparatus where engines show up, put the fire out, the next engine assists with a water supply. First engine, make sure to leave room for the ladder. Ladder, either go to the roof or start your search. So now, like, it's baby steps for us, but hopefully what I'd like to see is our battalion chiefs allow, because our staffing is five. We are fortunate. We ride four, but our staffing can be five. What I would love to see is our administration allow us to split, like, because for me, like my crew, right? If we're riding five, to me, it's kind of pointless to have to send three guys on a roof to ventilate and one guy just sitting there watching. Why not go two and two, two go on the roof to cut a hole, two start to search? Like, the faster you get the task going, the better it is for the victim if there is a victim inside. The only way we know that, though, is by doing the search.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's not a bad idea when you got four. So
Right.
your driver of the ladder is a hands-on person as well.
He can be, but a lot of times we would like our driver to stay with the truck because what I like to do, and another captain on my shift on the other ladder, we like to do is set the ladder up for possible defensive operations. Get a ladder thrown to each side of the structure for
Oh,
means
wow.
of egress if it's on the second floor. You know what I mean? Like, be
Yeah.
proactive. A lot of organizations don't like, well, you're just throwing ladders to throw ladders. Number one, for me, it gets me to understand, hey, which ladder is going to get to the desired target that I need to, because we have different lengths. And it gets the driver out there to get the sets and reps, even if it's not burning. Like, if we respond, if I'm driving and we arrive first due, or hell, even second due to a possible structure fire, I'm going to start throwing ladders until command says, hey, you can stop. Like,
I
why
like it.
not? You know, why not?
Absolutely.
It just gets the sets and reps in.
Yes, it does. It's needed. Our department doesn't do every side, but we'll at least, if there's an extinguishment team upstairs, we'll throw one ladder to one window and just let them know you got a ladder to egress if you need.
Right.
But like you said, sets and repetitions, that's key, because even if you've thrown a ladder five times for nothing, that sixth time you need it,
That's
you're just
right.
going to have that muscle memory down.
That's right. And you know, my organization doesn't, I'm sure you see more fire than we do. I'm sure it, because like ours fires are few far and in between. But for me, what it also does is when it is actually burning, we're not new to it. It's like, oh, okay, it's burning. I'm gonna throw this ladder like I did the other day.
I like it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so when it's now heavy stuff, you can still work calmly.
That's right. That's right. That's right. 100%. Okay.
Can I
I
touch on
own.
the outside training topic? And you talked about
Sure.
making it real.
Yeah.
I do have to say, this is what I like about your channel, your Instagram feeds specifically. And whether it's you and your other contemporaries, blue collar firemen, Dave Nowacki's fourth man out of Detroit. Tip of the Spears got some good video out there. If you're on the YouTube side, what Stockton Fire posts.
Oh my gosh, love them. Yes.
What's nice about that, and this is, I think, the best change in the fire service in the last 10 years, is we now have accessible to us so much video footage of helmet cam or bystander video. So we're now breaking down as a crew on the TV screen in the kitchen, fire scenes, good or bad,
Right.
and saying, look what they saw with the smoke. Why are they stretching the hose over here? And we'll have these half-hour-long strategy sessions with the crew, and the young people get to hear this and get to hear the way the officers and engineers are thinking. And that's, to me, that crew training that where we're watching real house fires and real commercial building fires, and sometimes the occasional mistake that happens, but a lot of the times just watching really good work has been more valuable than any of the formal training I've been to in the last couple of years.
No, that's a fact. And I kind of look at it as, you know, there's been this push that firefighters are tactical athletes, which I agree. So the flip side to that is all these videos that are being out there published, you know, Instagram pages, Facebook, YouTube, let's take those videos and let's watch it. It's like film, right? Athletes, Tom Brady watches film when he's not
Yes.
in the game.
All the time.
So why can't we do the same thing and take from it? Oh, okay. They, because no fire ground's perfect. And I always like this preface that I am not perfect, but what I do, I'm fortunate. I have different cameras either when I'm on shift or training or whatever the case. I'll go back and I'll be like, ooh, I messed this up. And even if nobody else sees it, I know it. And it's like, all right, I got to do better at this.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a helmet cam as well, which people could see on my channel. And I love the discussions that come out from it. I like the lessons that come out from it. And I don't take personal in the comment section if people want to say, would you have thought of a different tactic? No, it's about learning and it's about discussing these things openly. And you can't have a thin skin when it comes to this.
That's right. Like, if we're gonna debate, let's debate as adults, because everyone's gonna have a different opinion. Just
For
because you
sure.
don't like the way I do things doesn't mean like you're wrong. But that seems to be the flip side to social media, is because you don't do it this way, people aren't agreeing, and it now becomes a back and forth banter.
Yeah, you certainly don't want those comment sections to devolve into name calling between
Yes.
the aggressive types and the hit it from the yard types.
That's right.
You're right. There's room for an honest discussion.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. I always like to ask the guests before we end it is, where do you see yourself, or where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
I'm kind of eyeing a retirement date right now. So I'm comfortable where I'm at in this job. I have made some incredible friendships and professional relationships that have been forged, and possibly getting into teaching when I retire. There are some smaller but really busy fire departments. We've noticed this dynamic in southeastern Michigan recently of some smaller of our locals who are unable to hire, actually hiring retirees because they want people that are road ready. And you could just do a year or two, build up some savings, and then you're not a strain on their pension or health care. They're at least getting somebody because they can't get any young people to apply. And so I might look at something like that as well. But I definitely I'm nearing the end here.
And for the younger individual listening, is it crazy to you to see how fast your career has gone?
Yes, and all the senior guys told me the same thing. Just it goes by fast. There's a another podcast, a neurologist named Dave Eagleman, and he talks. His name, the podcast is Intercosmos. It's really good, and he just talks about how the brain works. And then he'll just have a 1 hour topic on a question somebody asks, and then how does the brain work? And one of them was, why does time seem to go faster the older you get? And it's just the way the brain's wired. You're taking in less information than when you're a child. When you're a child, you're just kind of living in the moment, and there's just so much science and data that goes behind it. But yeah, every year I live, it's another year that goes by faster than the prior year. I cannot believe how the brain just sees that.
Right. But on the plus side too, you're almost at the finish line. It's where a lot of us, I don't want to say a lot of us, it's where most of us want to get to, but it also it's like, I can't believe it's almost here.
Oh yes, we see it all the time at those retirement dinners. The person said, I can't believe how fast it went. It's an emotional thing to know you're giving that up. Yeah, it is definitely different from a 9-to-5 job. I'm so glad I chose this career.
Do you
Yeah, those.
think you'll be able to adjust once you're done from 24s and shift work?
Yes, I do. It's going to be hard. I really enjoy the 24-hour shift work. I'm glad I'm not a 9-to-5 worker. I found out early on I don't think I would have been cut out for that. But yes, I think I'll be ready. I've applied to run for city council in our city here. So if I am elected, it's a part-time job, but I think I could make a difference in how we support public safety.
Okay. All right. And the icing on the cake, no interruption on your sleep.
Yes, for sure. It is definitely something that I just got used to is
Right.
not
You
sleeping.
just
Because even if I get shut out at night, I'm not sleeping comfortably there.
That's right.
The
Yeah.
ambulance is going to go out two or three times, and I'm going to hear that. And so I'm just up listening to it, and it's just, yeah, I just got used to just not sleeping and just taking naps and power napping and stuff like that. What helped though, and I know this is something you've talked about in your podcast and prior episodes, is the role of physical fitness on the job. That has absolutely helped me the most. Having fitness almost become a hobby, so it isn't a chore to have to go into the gym. And it has really, really made a difference here at the later stage of the career. I recommend it to everybody. And I know you've been harping on this for a couple of years
That's
now.
what I try. That's what I try to
You
get
got
people to
to.
understand. You got it's non-negotiable. Like with what we do, the like it's crazy if you look at the science behind it. Like I have two watches. I have a Garmin and I have a Fitbit. So like, if you just notice when let's just say like we get a fire alarm activation and we have to investigate, just putting all your gear on and walking around looking for the problem. When you get done, go back in the data and look at what doing that just walking. There's no fire. We're just investigating what that does to your heart rate.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Carry a Halligan with a pack on and a helmet on and just walk for a little bit. And I choose to not carry extra tools in my pockets. I'll carry a hand tool if I need to, but I prefer to be lighter. I don't begrudge the people who carry lots of stuff. It's fine, but I like to be lighter. And because I'm on an engine company where I'm sometimes going up on roofs and I'm sometimes searching, and sometimes I'm on a line. It's just the way I like to perform. But yeah, you're right. It's got to be non-negotiable. And I've seen far too many people get to the end of their career and they can't wait to reach that pension number they wanted because they're physically just unable to do it anymore. And I've just back in the day, it was common. And now we've just got so many people that like to stay in shape. The food choices are different around the station. And yeah, boy, does it make a difference, because I'm surprised how many times I'll go to a fire with a younger person who, and this is what's great about our job, is we're now hiring people from other industries, not just young kids who did four in the military or on the football team and then they just gonna apply right out of high school. We got people that are changing careers at 25 or 30 years old and coming here. But some of them might not have worked a labor job in the past. And so I'm routinely being told at fire scenes, man, you're hard to keep up with. And so we get a lot of people that have to go through the learning curve of, well, boy, I thought I was in shape, but what's the type of shape I need to be in? How do I improve the strength, or how do I improve the endurance, or how do I improve the cardio? But man, having that be part of your culture makes a difference later in the career.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the weight and the gear. I think for me it was like a year and a half, 2 years ago. We got back from a fire alarm and I was like, man, I just feel like tired. And then so after we came back, it was in the middle of the night, everybody went inside. I put my gear back on and I'm like, damn, this jacket feels like heavy. And I just started taking shit out my pockets and I'm like, why do I have this? Why do I have that? So what I do, I keep a very minimal amount of things that I will need. And it's crazy how much of a difference that makes on the gear now when you put it on.
Sure. And then get it wet in a fire where you got water raining down on you. Oh, that's a pain in the butt to overhaul with your shoulders being soaked with water. Oh
Yeah,
my gosh.
definitely, definitely. Mark, I appreciate you coming on. I really do thoroughly enjoy this. Thank you for shifting the time a little bit, but we got it to work. I thoroughly have enjoyed this interview, and I just want to say thank you for seriously coming on, talking shop, man, spreading the love and passion for the fire service.
And thanks for what you do. These conversations are needed in the fire service, and I hope you reach as wide of an audience as possible, because not only just the videos that get posted where we could learn from scene size ups and reading smoke, actually sitting down and having a conversation about fire service culture and how we can get better is how we're going to get better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I appreciate you, sir.
Absolutely, Danny. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Yes, you too.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.